Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, incredibly, approaching the 32nd month of genocide in Palestine, there remain still in this country supporters of both the actions of Israel and its enablers of this 21st century Holocaust. And those supporters are not just insane religious fanatics praying for a second coming. They are two members of Canada's ruling elite, men and women in gray suits, wielding government power, business influence, and directing the boards of each of our professional institutions, who, despite protestations of support for rule of law and decency, refuse to enforce existing statutes and protocols to rein in at least Canada's contribution to the slaughter. Eve Angler is an activist, journalist, and the author of countless articles and essays detailing Canada's foreign policy history. He's written a dozen books on the subject, including Stand on Guard for Whom? A People's History of the Canadian Military, House of Mirrors, Justin Trudeau's Foreign Policy, Left Right, Marching to the Beat of Imperial Canada. His latest is Canada's Long Fight Against Democracy, co-written with Owen Schock. His website, eveangler.com, is the necessary first stop for Canadians and foreigners alike wishing to understand better the cognitive dissonance laying between the proclaimed and demonstrable character of this Canada. His latest article there, PQ Leaders Pro-Israel Anti-Muslim Racism Must Be Challenged, reinforcing the point. Welcome back to the program, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
It's always my pleasure. Of course, now, Eve, in this week's episode of the Canadian Foreign Policy Hour, you touched on the Just Peace Advocates' submission to the CRA, again, regarding charity tax status for organizations assisting a foreign military. Who, Eve, are these organizations?
Well, the recent report details 11 different schools that are and or associated charities to the schools that are basically violating Canada Revenue Agency rules, or at least is a good argument to violating the rules, because these 11 schools are assisting the Israeli military, and CRA rules are very clear about that not being allowed. Most of there are Toronto and Montreal schools. And, you know, one of them, B'nai Akiva, boasted in 2023 that 220 of its graduates had joined the Israeli military. The parent of a student in that school in 2024, I believe it was, said there was a quarter of the class of the male stream was going to the Israeli military. So there's these schools that basically bring in Israeli soldiers to speak, either former or current Israeli soldiers to speak to students. They organize all kinds of different fundraiser type events for projects that assist the Israeli military. In some cases, it's like they'll do fundraising initiatives that support alumni of their school that have gone and joined the Israeli military. And they, at least indirectly at minimum, and almost certainly directly, though it's hard to prove this because this is a violation of the law, they recruit. They certainly induce, that's the word in the Foreign Enlistment Act, students to join the Israeli military. So it's a big report, 60 pages, all kinds of details, all kinds of financial details. I mean, we're talking about tens and tens of millions of dollars that these charities are raising annually here in Quebec, on top of the fact these schools are registered charities. The Quebec Education Ministry gives $5,300 per student in private schools. So that actually works out to $37 million. There's about 7,000 kids in Jewish schools in Montreal. So that works out about $37 million of subsidy through the Quebec Education Ministry. And then on top of that, they're the registered charities. So it's a big, I think it's a big scandal. And what this report has called for is just for the CRA to investigate the schools and uphold its laws, its rules that say that registered charities are not allowed to support a foreign military. And so it's basically just calling for applying the law. But there has been quite a backlash from B'nai B'rith and Sija and Haaretz and Jerusalem Post have published articles already. And they're complaining, according to Sija, this is an effort to erase Jewish life in Canada, is how they frame it, but it's really just about upholding existing CRA rules. I'm of the opinion that these rules should go much further. I think that the whole charity mechanism should just be abolished. Effectively, it's a way to subsidize donations from wealthier people just across the board. If people want to give money, they can give money. There's no need for the government to provide a tax receipt. But that's a sort of bigger question. So I think that should be reformed. But more specifically, I think that this whole mechanism of these hundreds and hundreds of charities that support projects in Israel, they should be completely reined in a whole bunch of different forms. But at minimum, the existing laws that the CRA has should be applied.
I thought this was old news, though, Eve. Wasn't this settled last year? Why? I mean, I know it's the last day of taxes and everything, but why is this coming up again?
Well, it's just a new report. I mean, it's just added research. In one sense, it is old news. There's a whole bunch of new financial data in the report, and it's much more comprehensive. In it's 11 different schools that are detailed, and it's part of a broader campaign that has been successful in pressuring the CRA to revoke the charitable status of groups like the Canadian Zionist Cultural Association, the Jewish National Fund.
Oh, I see. So that's what I'm thinking about, was that there was already revocations by the CRA, but these schools haven't been included in that yet.
They haven't been included, nor have dozens and dozens of other registered charities that are assisting the Israeli military, right? I mean, it's just there's been comprehensive reports or submissions detailing, I don't know exact number offhand, right, but into the two dozen different charities for violating CRA rules. And they've only acted on, I think it's about, it might be up to a half dozen now in the last couple of years. And beyond the charities that have had, submissions that have been made detailing their support for the Israeli military or West Bank settlements or municipalities or racist organizations, which all contravene existing CRA rules. They've there's many, many other organizations that haven't been pursued formally by, pro-Palestinian groups that should also be revoked. So it could well be into the range of 100 plus organizations that should have their charitable status revoked.
Well, it strikes me as ironic when you cite CEJA, the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, saying that this is an attempt to erase Jewish life in Canada, when it seems like recruiting children to go in and to fight in wars and possibly be killed is certainly an erasure of Jewish life. But it's also the whole idea of Zionism is to have Jews that live in other countries leave those countries and move to Israel. So that, too, would erase Jewish life in Canada, too, presumably.
Yeah, no, that is no doubt a fairly ironic that these schools, the extreme schools, I mean, that's exactly what they're doing. They're trying to promote so-called aliyah of moving Canadian young kids moving to Israel. So it is the contradiction there of CEJA making that claim of those who are just actually calling on the CRA to uphold its existing rules and at most revoke the public subsidies to these organizations, that's being framed as erasing Jewish life, whereas telling kids that the most important thing they could do is to move to Israel and join the Israeli military, that's not viewed as erasing Jewish life in Canada. But that's, just one of the innumerable examples of how Zionism has very much distorted reality, and these organizations have the framing of this like it's a form of discrimination to uphold CRA rules is in and of itself really kind of contradictory. I mean, this is not basically my view of how understanding the Canadian relationship to Israel. It's a totally unique situation. There's hundreds of organizations that give $500 million or so to projects in Israel. There's all these kids that go and join the Israeli military in violation of the Foreign Enlistment Act. There's all these people who probably violated the War Crimes and Crimes Against Humanity Act. There's apparently 1,500 Canadians in the Israeli military, and they won't apply the War Crimes Act. There's all these kind of unique, special treatment of Israel. And so just treating Israel as kind of like a normal right-wing country would be a big step towards justice. But from the perspective of the pro-Israel groups, they see applying charity law as some sort of discrimination against them.
Is there such a thing? Does the Canadian military go into Canadian, you know, other schools and encourage students to join the military as well?
There would be some of that. There's definitely, you know, the Canadian military. I detail some of that in my Stand on Guard for Whom book. They definitely have projects where they'll have kids. They'll let kids do sort of like go through the tank or go through the light armored vehicle or some sort of other.
At school, though, you mean? Are they bring these to the schools?
Yeah, even at schools, yeah.
Oh, I mean, Jesus.
They're not operational tanks, I don't think. But they do, yeah. So there is some form. There have been, you know, the peace movement over the years, there were real pushes to drive off the military from schools. And the military has historically, even actually, just remembering some of these details, they had like whole, like pretty formal relationships with what are they called? Like the counselors, you know, you're at schools, they have you sort of counsel, whatever they call that. And so, and they would try to, I guess, direct kids towards possibly joining the military. And they, and actually, in fact, historically, the Canadian military even like sponsored all kinds of like school textbooks and stuff like that, that they get their, like, you know, get their product in quotations, right in the face of different students. Now, it's interesting. The CRA rules say you as a registered charity, you can support the Canadian military. Their rules have nothing to do with Israeli crimes. The rules are just about a sort of nationalist logic, which says that it's, you know, it's a charitable activity to support the Canadian military, some sort of, you know, support, I don't know, someone who was, you know, veterans or somebody who was harmed in Afghanistan or whatever. But you can't support foreign militaries.
Well, and I'm looking at the Jerusalem Post article on this, but it's not just the schools now. They cite B'nai B'rith in Canada, too, and other organizations, as you do in your article. And you quote them as saying that not only are they promoting or supporting Israel, but they're also going after people in Canada, saying, for one thing, that Canada must designate the Muslim Brotherhood chapters in this country and other places as well. So now, Eve, you're in Montreal, and you've written about Quebec and the attitudes within Quebec. These tax laws, presumably they're federal laws, so they apply across the board. I don't know. I mean, I know Quebec has a lot of different tax structures because of the you know, the political situation there and so forth. But what about the attitudes in Quebec? You write that Quebec, within Quebec, there's, quote, outsized support for Muslim bashing, but paradoxically, they're more sympathetic to Palestinians and critical of Israel. How do we square these two seemingly opposite emotions from the those polled in Quebec?
It's a bit hard to square them sometimes. There's clearly a anti-Muslim kind of wave that is justified under the grounds of secularism in Quebec, and that has been pushed by the current government, the CAQ. In the article, I, you know, refer to the leader of the Parti Québécois, who will likely be the next premier, who makes this claim that the Muslim Brotherhood is like taking over, and the reason that we haven't you know, taken it seriously is because the federal liberal government holds the same outlook as the Muslim Brotherhood, so they're kind of like, you know, in cahoots with the Muslim Brotherhood. And it's a pretty outlandish kind of claim, and it was made at 2 weeks ago or so at a town hall organized by the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs. But also, you see that, and you know, there's really repressive measures, of course, that the CAC have pursued with banning, headscarf, hijabs in all kinds of different employment. And so there's real, attack on Muslims in Quebec. But also, the polls show they're more pro-Palestinian. And where the leader of the Parti Québécois, where he's going with this, there's a history in the 70s, the sovereignty movement was pro-Palestinian. It was like a left Quebec nationalist movement that had, way ahead of English Canada on the question of Palestine. I think there's some of the legacy of that that still impacts popular opinion. I think there's elements that have to do with, getting more media in the French language versus English and getting more dominated by US media in English Canada. There's different elements. But yeah, so now the pro-Palestinian sentiment hasn't really translated into political manifestation in terms of policy. So you have this Quebec government opening up a business office in Tel Aviv. Apparently, actually, they just shut down the one Cuba, and so as the genocide's going on, they're opening it up, and the process began before October 7th. But they setting up a business office in Tel Aviv. There's significant ties between the CAC government and the pro-Israel organizations like CEJA. So it hasn't really translated into policy. And even the Bloc Québécois has gone further and further away from any sort of solidarity with Palestinians. The leader of the Bloc Québécois in the last election had a significant did a big thing with Erwin Kotler, which was very indicative of how the party has kind of moved away from some of its remnants of being pro-Palestinian. But yeah, so they are two different dynamics, kind of pulling in different directions. But politically speaking, the anti-Muslim element is one that's is the dominant in terms of turning into policy, and that of course has to do with the power structure. And when you have the leader of the Parti Québécois, pushing this notion that the Muslim Brotherhood is going to take over, now you're down some pretty far kind of anti-Muslim type path.
Well, and the article that you're referring to, the PQ leaders pro-Israel anti-Muslim racism must be challenged, is at eveengler.com, and that's Paul Saint-Pierre Plamondon, or Plamondon. I'm certain I'm pronouncing that wrong, Paul, forgive me, or PSPP, as you helpfully put in an acronym. And he is the Parti Québécois leader. You say that he's expected to gain provincial power at the next election, maybe in the autumn. But you also talk about the unfortunately acronymed, at least in English, CAC party that is ruling right now, outlawing prayer, group prayer in public spaces, including parks, without municipal authorization. What on earth is that about?
Well, that flowed. I mean, they justify it as part of the secular agenda, but I watched that play out mostly kind of, I guess, about a year ago now, where they started. It was at the start and at the end of the Montreal for Palestine demonstrations every Sunday, which took place every Sunday for two. Now they're a little less common, or every maybe 2 weeks or something, but for 2 years plus, every Sunday. And there was a prayer to start and at the end, no matter where the rally started. And they started at, there's probably about half a dozen different, well, more, maybe more than that, but kind of four or five main locations around downtown. And they would end at different locations. And basically, these right-wing, like Rebel News, this Natasha Montreal, I think is her name, and Terry Newman at the National Post. They basically whipped up a whole storm about how this prayer was some sort of like a threat. And one of the parks that the demonstrations started at and ended at fairly regularly, particularly in the summertime, great location in Old Montreal, is right in front of the major church, Basilica, Notre Dame Basilica, I think it is the name of it, in Old Montreal. And so the prayer would happen in front of the church, and they basically framed it as like a I don't know, intimidation of the church, or some sort of like religious whatever. And they went so far as to start saying, when they'd show images on Twitter, I'd see where these right-wing influencers would show marches passing by a church, and they would say, "Oh, this is, this is the part of the conquest of the Muslim Brotherhood, of these Muslims, and this or that." But like, anyone who knows downtown Montreal is like, churches everywhere, right? Montreal has some of the most churches. There's streets where there's two on a street. I don't know if it's actually true, but people claimed it had the most, at one point in, I think, the early 1900s, late 1800s, had the most churches anywhere outside of Rome. And so it's but they were able. So it's come to this merger of this sort of anti-Palestinian Zionist forces trying to malign these demonstrations, merging the politics of that with this sort of, I don't know, this Quebec nationalist. Some people say jokingly, it's how do they do it in French? It's like secular Catholics, right? Like, so it's all under the guise of secularism, but they're actually, there's a whole underpinning of sort of Catholic kind of whatever. And so it basically merged it, and they were able to get the government to pass this legislation. I don't know if it would, how they're going to actually apply it. It's quite, what is prayer, right? Like, the what's that group that plays music a lot? Anyways, I'm forgetting the religious group that sometimes downtown, and they'll, how does that, what is defined as prayer? If you're, playing music as 20 people, is in a religious context, is that a form of prayer? Or, so there's all these things I haven't followed enough to know.
Well, is anybody challenging this this enactment in court? I mean, it sounds like it's going to be spend a lot of time getting with lawsuits.
Yeah, I don't. It just adopted at the start of the month, so I haven't heard of a case, and I haven't heard of any like arrests being made.
Well, this idea that demonstrators can't demonstrate in front of churches reminds of what happened in Toronto when they tried to say, well, you can't demonstrate if you're within so many meters of a synagogue. That's my transition to, because we only have a couple of minutes left, Eve. Another article you have up at eveangler.com: Zionist ex-Toronto cop calls for even more repression. We've seen pictures of guys with police with machine guns who don't look like police. They look like paratroopers or something, marching around. And a new idea of how to keep the peace in Toronto.
Yeah, well, there's a wave of anti-Palestinian targeting by the Toronto police, and this goes back, obviously, from well, the statements that were made on October 7th and the fear mongering around that. But the recent thing was the CBC, the National, the Adrian Arsenault, having this retired cop, Hank Ensinga, who I was not familiar with, but he's actually a prominent cop. He retired like 3 years ago. He was in charge of some important murder files, so I guess he got a fair bit of media attention during his career. And they have him on to basically, he's got a book out, and he tells a story about experiencing overt anti-Semitism during his career. He doesn't name names, he just tells a few different stories. He's referring to one officer in specific, this overt anti-Semitism. And then he kind of alludes to an incident of anti-blackness that he also witnessed. But then he transitions this to basically saying the reason why the cops in Toronto haven't busted more heads of opponents of genocide is because it's anti-Semites who are determining, how to deal with the protesters, and which is obviously a very intense political claim, and one that's completely counter to what the Toronto police have actually done, like the very over-the-top targeting of the people who put up posters on an Indigo, and it was a dozen people had their houses raided, including early in the morning, for like literally putting up political posters on a storefront, something that barely, maybe $100 fine or something like that. But, and also what the, and as part of that, we know that the head of the police, had multiple phone calls with the owner of Indigo, Heather Reisman, who's a, prominent anti-Palestinian. He's the head of the Toronto police, has been photographed with these Jewish Zionist vigilante groups on multiple occasions. So it goes completely counter to what the Toronto police have actually done. And as you mentioned, this, recent militarization of the police as a intimidation tactic against pro-Palestinian activism. And then when I went and looked, but the CBC just presents this all as like totally, don't challenge him at all. Adrian Arsenault just accepts this as a totally. And I go and like look at the guy's background, spend like 20 minutes looking at his Twitter file, for instance, and he's just a rabid anti-Palestinian activist. And like most of what he does is on his X file is retweets these like hardline Zionists criticizing the Toronto police for not, suppressing more demonstrations. He spoke at a CJ forum in February alongside three or four other, hardline anti-Palestinian people. And so here you have this major claim made on the National that basically the Toronto police that are, going soft on protesters is because they're anti-Semites, which is really flipping the world upside down. You have this pushed, and with no questioning from Adrian Arsenault, and it's just one more example of this sort of what some have called the anti-Semitism industrial complex of just this endless claims of anti-Jewishness to justify to enable Canada's support for Israel's genocide in Gaza, lawlessness all across the region. It was pretty remarkable to see this just, 2.5 years into the genocide, this still continues, right? These like incidents every, week or two for now 100 plus weeks of these sort of claims of anti-Semitism, all as part of justifying, violence against Palestinians.
Yeah, entering the 32nd month. Well, Eve, we're fast out of time. EveAngler.com, go there to find out more about, we just touched on some of the things, and there's always, of course, so much more. And I was speaking to your co-founder of the Canadian Foreign Policy Institute, Tamara Lawrence, in the first half, Eve. And we were talking, and I failed to mention the CANSEC confab coming up in Ottawa in May. So I'll remind people to go and get involved with people that are trying to put an end to that. And I'll put links down below. Thanks a lot, Eve, for coming on again, especially as a last minute savior to cover for my first guest who took seriously ill.
Thanks for having me.
And that's all I got for this week. Till the next time.
Speak up. Speak Up. You're listening to Speak Up on CJSO